cliff. Thanking the nanosuits for their flexibility, Jamie swung over and planted his boots on the solid rimrock. Hasdravel did the same. Then the two of them helped DiNardo get himself set on the ground and out of his harness. Jamie held up his left arm to peer at the greenish glow of the GPS readout among the instruments on the pad he wore on his wrist. "The dome's this way," he said, starting off toward the horizon. "We have you on the positioning system," came the voice of the excursion controller. "You're exactly 572 meters from the dome." The original dome from the first expedition had been sighted more than 100 kilometers to the northwest on the other side of the Noctis Labyrinthus Badlands. When it became obvious that the main base for the explorers should be down on the floor of the Rift Valley, Jamie had approved the geologist's insistence that they keep a pair of campers up on the plain for excursions to the Tharsis Bulge Highlands and their massive shield volcanoes. "Now we're going to examine an impact," Jamie said to himself as the rounded hump of the dome rose like a sharp-edged black shadow against the starry sky. "That's something different from the blue world," Jamie thought as they walked toward the dome. "There's hardly any haze on Mars, especially at night when the temperature's so cold. No foliage or buildings either. You can see the stars right down to the horizon." The dome was powered by a small nuclear reactor buried half a kilometer away. It had provided electrical power for nearly 20 years. Jamie remembered that it would need refueling in another 5 years or so. The dome's airlock was big enough for all three of them to squeeze in together. Its dim red lighting still seemed bright to Jamie after spending nearly an hour out in the night. Once they stepped through the airlock's inner hatch, though, the dome lit up brilliantly. Jamie blinked and suppressed an urge to laugh out loud. "Well, the lights work," said Hasdravel. He stepped quickly to the monitoring console that sat next to the airlock. "The heat, too," DiNardo said. "Gracias Dei." Jamie realized he wasn't the only one who had felt cold out in the night. Hasdravel scanned the console screens. "According to the readouts, the air's okay. Kind of chilly in here, though, not quite up to 20 degrees Celsius." Jamie grinned. "That's better than outside."
"Amen," said Monsignor DiNardo.
The three of them pulled down the hoods of their suits as they looked around the dome. It was a spare facility. One row of cubicles for sleeping quarters, a compact galley that hadn't been used in months, consoles that monitored the life support systems, a communications console, and across the open floor sat the two campers. Big enough to carry four persons in relative comfort, the campers were cylindrical in shape, with big bug-eye windows up front. They rested on 8 sets of springy wheels that always looked to Jamie as if they were too fragile to support the weight, but on Mars they were fine. Their once-gleaming aluminum skins were caked with red dust. It made them look rusty, hard-used. Glancing at his wristwatch, Jamie said, "Let's check out the campers, then get some sleep. Big day tomorrow." "Don't you think we should call base and let them know we're here?" Hasdravel suggested. Jamie knew it was strictly routine. Their monitors back at the base watched us every step of the way. Still, he called back to Dr. Chang. "I'll call VJ once I'm in one of the sleeping cubicles," he told himself. Los Angeles, campaign headquarters.
"I'm not going to kiss ass for those yahoos!"
Malcolm Fry wasn't angry, but he was upset as he paced across the room they had set up to be his private office. As a candidate for the U.S. Senate, Fry spent precious little time at his campaign headquarters. He was on the road constantly, crisscrossing the state by plane, bus, and his personal hydrogen-fueled minivan. Fry was black enough to entice the minority vote, but not so liberal that he frightened the conservatives. He had made his money the old-fashioned way, in construction and real estate, and now was spending a considerable portion of it in this exhausting campaign. He was a big man, his hands still calloused from his early days as a construction worker. His smile had charmed voters, especially women voters, since he'd first gotten into politics as a city councilman in Pasadena. He had climbed the greasy pole up to the point where the news media claimed he had an excellent chance to become California's next senator. There were even whispers of his running for president later on. He was young enough for that.
But now he glowered at his campaign manager as he paced the spacious office, from its shuttered window to the big desk in the corner and back again. His campaign manager, Howard McChesney, sat in a tense bundle of nerves in the armchair in front of the desk, his head swiveling back and forth, following his candidate's pacing. McChesney was a wiry, edgy type, with a lantern-jawed face and cold blue eyes. "They may be yahoos," he said, his voice scratchy as fingernails on a chalkboard, "but they can throw the election into your lap. Or into John Frito's." "The mafia candidate," Fry muttered bitterly. "Now, you've got to let them have their way with this," McChesney insisted. "If you don't, you'll lose the election. It's that simple." Fry stopped his pacing and fixed McChesney with a look that had terrified labor gangs and corporate directors. "Howie," he said in a quietly intense voice, "they want me to withdraw my support for science courses in the public schools. I can't do that. Hell, when I was on the school board, I fought to keep science in the curriculum. They tried to slit my throat over that. Now you want me to buddy up to them?" "If you want to be senator," McChesney replied, "I can't do it."
"You mean you won't do it?"
"That's right, I won't." McChesney drew in a breath, then said, "Let me paint a picture for you, Malcolm." Fry sat on the edge of his desk and folded his arms across his chest. When McChesney called him Malcolm, he knew things were getting grim.
"So you stand up to the fundamentalists," McChesney said, his head tilted back as if he were talking to the ceiling. "You insist on pushing for more funding for science courses in public schools."
Fry nodded. "The new morality, the Catholic Church, and every Christian sect in this crazy state votes against you. You lose the election, John Frito wins. What's the first thing he does when he gets to Washington?"
Sullenly, Fry answered, "He votes to cut federal funding for science classes."
McChesney spread his arms. "So there you are. What have you accomplished except to lose the election?"
"I still don't like it."
"Neither do I, but there it is. It ain't going to go away. Those yahoos, as you call them, will work night and day for years and years to get what they want. They're patient, they're organized, and they're absolutely certain that they're right, and anybody who's against them is wrong. They're certain that God's on their side."
Fry seemed to sag in on himself. "So I either give in to them or lose the election. Is that what you're saying?"
"That's what I'm saying."
"There's got to be some other way. Got to be." McChesney said nothing for several moments while Fry stared at him, silently pleading.
"Well, maybe."
"What?" The campaign manager pressed his lips into a thin line, gazed up at the ceiling again, then finally said,
"Maybe we could try to outflank 'em."
"What do you mean?"
"The ultra-conservatives are all worked up about this Mars business. They want to stop the program and bring all the scientists home."
"Stop the Mars program," Fry murmured.
"Yeah, I've heard them bitching about how much it costs." McChesney said, "It's more than the money. They don't like the scientists talking about finding intelligent life on Mars."
"It's extinct, isn't it?"
"Even so. They want to get everybody off Mars and forget the whole thing."
Fry shook his head. "Damn yahoos."
"Maybe so. But if you come out strong against Mars, maybe you can finesse the science class issue."
"Against Mars?"
Breaking into a wide smile, McChesney explained. "The beauty of it is that it doesn't mean a thing. The government's already cut all the Mars funding to zero. So you can make a big splash about bringing those people back from Mars without making any difference at all to what's really happening."
Fry was silent for several moments, thinking.
At last he asked, "I just make some noise against Mars and sidestep the school issue?"
"Good work," McChesney said hopefully.
Another few moments of silence. Then,
"Okay, let's do it."
McChesney slapped his hands together.
"Good. I'll get Tilton and her people working on a statement for you to make. And I'll schedule a meeting with the head of the New Morality's California organization."
Fry grit his teeth, but said, "Okay, do that." Tithonia Fossi, The Crater.
Jamie's pocket phone was buzzing. He snapped awake and looked around, confused for a moment. Then he realized